Tim's News Explosion. 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 Tim's News Explosion.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to this special Tim's News Explosion on this Tuesday, the 2nd of July. It's the start of the financial year. We are live on the Wilmsfront YouTube channel, the Wilmsfront Odyssey channel, and the Wilmsfront Rumble channel. Hello to everyone joining us in the live chat. Hello, Andy Nolch from the still called the Indie Scientology podcast on YouTube, my former Theorists co-host, and Iron Duke 99, who is one of my co-hosts for the UK general election results live stream on Friday. I will certainly be getting to what's been happening in the final countdown. It is 9 p.m. here in Melbourne, Victoria. Now, reason I'm coming to you on a Tuesday night is because during the show's regular Monday night time slot, I was at the final leg of the Australian Freedom Conference to see Tucker Carlson at the Plenary Theatre at the Melbourne Exhibition and Convention Centre. So I today wrote my review and also my vlog from the event. So the event began, Tucker was kept right till the end. So it began with Dr. Melissa McCann. I'm glad I didn't mispronounce and say Dr. Madeleine McCann, because that's one of the things that I sometimes do. Now, she spoke about she is tenacious and relentless at pursuing the government and health officials over the COVID vaccines and seeking justice for those who have been vaccine injured and have died. She's been threatened with deregistration. She's had to go to a re-education course already to learn about how great COVID vaccines are. Clive Palmer, who was the organizer of the Freedom Conference and also the bankroller of it, founder of the United Australia Party, which is deregistered at the federal level, and also I think most of the state level as well. His United Australia Party senator from Victoria, Ralph Babette, was the MC. He injected his usual high energy to it. Now, Dinesh D'Souza, who's the US filmmaker, he had to go home early. We were treated to a free, because you have to pay for his movies, we were treated to a segment from his movie 2000 Mules, which shows through geo-tracking data and also CCTV outside of these mail-in drop boxes, how the ballot harvesting, which is actually illegal in the United States, but is common practice, tracked all the mules going to the various drop boxes to drop off votes here and there. And there's also evidence of people's votes being bought as well for a tenner or thereabouts, and there's still going to be mass mail-in voting at the upcoming 2024 US presidential election, even though Joe Biden himself has said the pandemic is over. There's no such thing as a temporary measure, and because, well, you'll remember election night 2020, it looked like Trump was easily going to be re-elected. Then all the voting in the swing states stopped. Then all the Americans went to bed, and then they woke up, and all of the the postal mail-in ballots, were the trucks were driven in, and then all the states flipped and Joe Biden won. Now, Iron Duke has preempted what Tucker Carlson's key message was, and that is, well, I called it a warning, because he spoke about how much he loved being here in Australia. He said that our cities were clean compared to the US's decaying cities. He called London, because he went to London to visit Julian Assange in Belmarsh, he called London disgusting. And he was also impressed with our infrastructure that had been built by ancestors over centuries. And he also loved our larrikin profanity. So he said that the word that he's taking back to the States is wanker, or you pronounced it wanker with an A. And also admired how much we love our animals. And he said he'd heard about the deadly snakes and the saltwater crocodiles that eat people, but he'd never heard of the swooping magpies. And he says, why don't you just shoot these swooping magpies? And everyone reacted, no, you don't do that. Although some which just attack everybody do get put down. So Tucker Carlson said the welcome to country is telling you that you live on stolen land. It's not really your country is done, so they can take it away from you. And nanny state regulations, because he was shocked by our tobacco tax, $60 for a deck of 20. And he also didn't like our seatbelt cameras. They're in place not because they want to take care of us, it's because they hate you. And all of these surveillance cameras, they're around not to protect you, but it's there to make sure that you're kept in line. I think what I'll do now is I'll play in the vlog that I published on, it's on the Unshackled YouTube channel and Rumble and Odyssey. I'll play Tucker's remarks because it's worth hearing for yourself what he said. There was no restriction on filming there, so I was able to just get my camera phone out, and there was no usher to say, no filming in here.
If at every turn they're telling you it's not your country, a country that, by the way, your ancestors built, and they did an amazing job. Amazing. So, I mean, somebody spent a lot of years and a lot of money and a lot of back-breaking efforts to build what you have now. And it's just remarkable. But rather than being proud of it, the people who run your country are telling you you should be ashamed of it and that it doesn't belong to you. You have no claim to it at all. So the conventional understanding of this is, well, this is just what it is to be guilty. You're in a prosperous country and you feel guilty. But that's not actually what it's about. Because making people feel guilty doesn't help anybody, right? No. They're telling you it's not your country so that they can take it away from you and you won't resist when they do. Because it doesn't belong to you in the first place. So these countries have become, including my own, have become surveillance states. And the point of that surveillance is not to keep you safe, it's to punish you for noticing what they're doing to your country, actually. That's not the behavior of a legitimate government. And if you think that's like a right-wing point, you've bought the lies. That's not a right-wing point. That's a simple observation about human rights. No privacy, no freedom. Not to mention the endless hectoring. No, it's not your country. I went to buy a pack of cigarettes today. I quit smoking 10 years ago, but I thought, you know, you can kind of judge a country by its cigarettes. Couldn't find them. I went to this tobacco store. I said, this is a tobacco store. You don't need cigarettes? Oh, that's just a really nice Pakistani guy. He's like, shaking his head like, I know it's crazy. Opens up this cabinet. And I said, what? That's like, what the hell is on your cigarettes? Like, I don't even want to smoke. I'm looking at them. I was like, you're making me not want to smoke, Mr. Tobacco Store Guy. And he goes, I know. And every pack had like a rotted tongue on it or something. And again, I don't smoke cigarettes anymore. But I'm an adult man who pays his taxes. If I wanted to, I should be allowed to, right? You can certainly, you can do fentanyl here with the government's help. But you can't smoke a Marlboro without being lectured? Ugh. It's, I did ask how much they cost. It was $60 for a deck of 20. And I said to the guy, I don't want to smoke. And I've never said that in my life. And I know everyone's like, well, smoking's bad. Yeah, of course smoking's bad. Lots of things are bad. But it's not really anyone's business, is it? I guess wearing a seatbelt's a good idea. I mean, I don't, but my kids say it's a good idea. But when they're forcing you to do things for your own good, over time you question, like, is this really for my own good, or are they just softening me up to obey? So when it really comes down to it, when they want to inject me with some creepy compound that hasn't been tested, that they'll be able to, like, shoot me with a rubber bullet if I decline. And I'll be so trained.
Now, as you can see, Tucker, despite making very serious points, is also, as well as an excellent journalist and interviewer, is also an entertainer as well. You could hear all us chuckling in the background. Now, he came back on stage at the end to be interviewed by Clive Palmer. Clive talked about using his mining fortune during the COVID pandemic to secure enough hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin for all Australians. Yet the medical authority said, no, we're not taking any of that. You shouldn't take any of that. And when Clive got COVID, and of course he's unvaccinated, they wanted to hook him up to a ventilator, but he was treated with a cocktail of ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and other monoclonal antibodies, and made a full recovery. And Clive, I thought, because an unvaccinated, big, fat, old guy like Clive supposed to die from COVID if he's not vaccinated, but he was fighting fit. He looked as slim as I think Clive can be. And he was wearing a white suit, which is not a slimming color, if black's the slimming color. And he, of course, helped fund the successful Supreme Court action in Queensland, which found that the mandates for police were unlawful. And he's also going to be funding Dr. Melissa McCann and other health professionals who are being threatened by the regulatory authorities. And it was quite, I thought Clive, when he spoke to Tucker, is quite a good interviewer, because he got all of Tucker's secrets out. Tucker, he was bewildered with our nanny state and the fact that the real unhealthy addiction that there's no regulation on is Tim Tams. He said he had one and then ate the whole packet and said wanted more. He was like, how are these legal? And also, Clive said you sniffed a koala, and Tucker confessed that he sniffs everybody that he knows, his wife and kids, by scent. He's just like Joe Biden in that regard. So I couldn't believe that Clive got that out of him. Now, Tucker, it was his last night in Australia. He's back over to the United States. He says that he feels that he should be back now that was the first question Clive asked him, what did you think of the debate? And he said, now it can't be disputed that Biden has dementia, whatever cognitive decline, we don't know the exact diagnosis. And that begs the question, who's running the country? He compared it to, you've seen your kidnapper without a mask on now. And so, of course, we're going to get into, well, I saw it live, that extraordinary debate. Let's put it that way. But the night ended with Clive Palmer promising to put on more freedom conferences. He says there's more international speakers who are interested to coming after Tucker's tour. And his, I think the highlight for those who couldn't attend any of the Freedom Conference events was his demolition of our mainstream media in Canberra, particularly that Australian Associated Press reporter, Kat Wong, who asked Tucker, you talked about how white people are being replaced. And he said, I don't think I've ever said that. And she said, you've said it 4,000 times. No, I said native-born Americans are being replaced. And as far as I know, Kat Wong or other journalists haven't been able to dig up Tucker Carlson from his thousands of hours of Fox News shows talking about white people being replaced. So she was very Wong, Kat Wong. Now, Australian Associated Press, it's like the lowest of the bottom of the mainstream media. I mean, they only get their stories circulated in regional newspapers now because News Corp and Nine Entertainment, they have their own newswire services now. And also, I couldn't believe she decided to keep going and said, do you share any responsibility for the Buffalo supermarket shooter and who talked about the white replacement in his manifesto? And of course, who's responsible for shooting up the Buffalo supermarket? It's the shooter, of course. Because Australian Associated Press, it's even lower than ABC. I mean, the ABC reporter who was there, a male, his question was actually quite intelligent for somebody at the ABC. And he told the Sydney crowd about how stupid he found our mainstream media. Tucker Carlson addressed that Julian Assange, finally back home in Australia, a free man after pleading guilty to obtaining and disclosing national defence information under the US Espionage Act. Of course, it was a completely bogus charge. How can you commit espionage against a country which you're not a citizen of? He's an Australian. And he pled guilty to that single charge and was sentenced in Saipan Island in the Northern Mariana Islands, a U.S. territory. Our ambassador to the U.S., Kevin Rudd, was with him to make sure that there was no last-minute deep state shenanigans, that they decided, oh, we're going to charge you after all. And all of us were holding our breath until he was back on Australian soil. I don't know if he flew back a Boeing because, well, they could have made sure that there was some accident on the flight. When he left London, it was good to see that he just got on the plane, Julian Assange, no handcuffs or anything. And of course, when he finally landed at the RAF base in Canberra, embraced his wife, Stella. His brother, Gabriel Shipton, was live on the ABC at the time. I actually did watch the ABC for Assange's homecoming because, of course, the Sky News is the neoconservative Zionist network, and Sherry Markson on her show the night before was absolutely seething. He's not a journalist. That is a besmirchment on my profession. He put Australian and US soldiers' lives in danger, even though they could never prove that he put any lives in danger. They say that he should have blacked out the names of informants, though. Then that wouldn't have been journalism. That would have been being a player. And every journalist has biases. I mean, just mentioning Sherry Markson herself. I mean, her show is basically the Zio Hour. Iron Duke says, I'm glad the British courts let Assange go. Well, that's because the US, it was brokered by the Albanese government and the Biden administration. They were willing to hold him. They held him in Belmarsh for 5.5 years. They were prepared to hold him, it seems, forever if the US deep state demanded it. And Of course, that is another one of the UK Conservative government's many horrendous acts. And Tucker Carlson said, why didn't you go send like a warship over to the United Kingdom to go and get your man back? Well, obviously, because we're part of the Commonwealth, it would like be it'd be like some sort of starting some sort of civil war, Commonwealth civil war. And so, like I said, the ABC, you'd get much more objective Assange coverage than over at Sky News. Another one was Greg Sheridan, the foreign editor of The Australian, who's a real war hawk as well. And on the ABC 7:30 program, Sarah Ferguson interviewed Republican Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene about Assange's release, because she was a vocal figure in Congress advocating for Julian Assange to be freed. And the ABC crowd, they were very upset. Couldn't you find a better Assange supporter to have on? And oh, she dead-named Chelsea Manning as Bradley Manning. And of course, the interview went after, because Sarah Ferguson always does, well, I've got you here, I'm going to ask you, you denied the results of the election, are you going to deny the results of this election if Trump loses? Or you visited the January 6th prisoners, and are you comfortable voting for a convicted felon? Well, Julian Assange is a convicted felon as well. The term convicted felon is beginning to lose all of its meaning. The Australian, they said Assange was a convicted felon, the Murdoch national rag. Well, so is Donald Trump as well. And they've also both, what else are they having in common? Donald Trump and Julian Assange is that they're both accused of sexual assault, though what Assange was accused of was stealthing, so having sex without a condom in Sweden, which is not what most people would consider rape sexual assault, but it's classified as these days. And now, Assange's lawyers and WikiLeaks, the organization that he still leads, they and his family, they're still going to lobby for a presidential pardon. We shall see if a re-elected President Donald Trump does grant the pardon, or whether he'll still surround himself with neoconservatives, because Trump's former vice president, Mike Pence, this was very disappointing. Assange should have been prosecuted the full extent of the law. And of course, Mike Pompeo, Donald Trump's Secretary of State, previously CIA director, tried to coordinate the assassination of Julian Assange. Iron Duke says, Assange is not our guy, but the enemy of our enemy. I saw that Drew Pavlou called him a traitor because Drew sees the world in black and white, that if you expose the war crimes of our governments, you must be in favor of our enemies. You're with us, or you're with the terrorists, or the axis of evil. Assange did have to pay for $500,000 for the flights. It was on a Bombardier Global 6000. Thank you for that info, Dawn Browning. But the money was raised almost instantly. Cryptocurrency donors. Hello, Linda Hunter. Good to see you there. Now, Anthony Albanese, he really wanted to own this as Prime Minister, and there was a grand coalition. Speaking of Marjorie Taylor Greene, there was that famous photo of her with Barnaby Joyce, Alex Antic, Monique Ryan, and two Green senators, Peter Wish Wilson, and also David Shoebridge. There was not much backlash against the Greens for having their photo taken with Marjorie Taylor Greene. I thought that was quite mature of them all to have it there, because you should work with people who I don't think the Greens and Marjorie Taylor Greene would see eye to eye on anything else. So, I mean, Anthony Albanese has to have credit for negotiating this, and obviously Kevin Rudd does as well. But they sort of Albanese, he sort of went a bit overboard by having the press conference during when Assange was arriving. I mean, we all wanted to watch Assange getting off the plane, not listen to Anthony Albanese. And he said that he spoke to Julian Assange, and Assange thanked him for saving his life. And of course, this upset the neoconservatives in the coalition's shadow cabinet, because yes, there's these dissident right people such as Alex Antic, Matt Canavan. Barnaby Joyce would classify more as a bleeding heart because he was for that the Bilawila Sri Lankan illegal immigrant family to remain here as well. But Simon Birmingham, the shadow foreign minister, liberal moderate, certainly not moderate when it comes to supporting wars, he said, "This call is neither necessary or appropriate. Julian Assange was not wrongfully detained like Cheng Lei, Shen Tunnell or Kylie Moore Gilbert. For 12 years, Assange shown to avoid facing justice in countries with fair judicial systems. He's undeserving of our treatment." Well, he thought that he would be executed if he was extradited to the United States. I mean, they literally wanted his head. The US deep state. And so this is fantastic. I saw that the neocon said, "Oh, what if Assange," because he hasn't given any interviews. I would have hoped that Tucker might have stayed to interview Assange, but that didn't happen. They say, "What if Assange starts leaking things about the Albanese government?" What? So you're saying that they should have kept Assange locked up in case that Assange in the future released any bad information about them? Is that, are you suggesting that they should keep political dissidents locked up? That sounds like stuff that Russia does, which of course you believe is our geopolitical enemy. Now, Anthony Albanese, good diplomatic win that he championed, it was soon completely out of the news cycle, because obviously it shows Anthony Albanese is a conviction politician in that regard, that he kept his word from opposition to government, that enough was enough. Assange Julian Assange should come home. But Assange being a free man to the ordinary Australian, it's not going to stop the cost of living increasing, stop inflation and reduce our energy bills and also make housing more affordable. So Anthony Albanese on July 1 championed that there'd be tax cuts for all Australians, $300 subsidy for your power bill. Though inflation has actually gone up in the last month from 3.6 to 4%. And also what Anthony Albanese is dealing with is a rogue backbencher in Western Australian Labor Senator Fatima Payman, though she is currently suspended by the Labor caucus for crossing the floor to support the Greens' motion to recognise Palestine. Fatima Payman, she is an Afghan refugee. She's in her late 20s. She wears the hijab. And she was elected third on the Labor West Australian ticket at the last federal election, which gave them their working majority with the Greens and David Pocock. So she, her election was a vital for them to be able to get a lot of their legislation passed. But unlike in the Liberal and National parties, if you cross the floor because Labor Party believes in solidarity, you're supposed to be automatically expelled. Though Anthony Albanese and Richard Miles said initially there'd be no punishment because they're worried about the backlash in Muslim communities at expelling a young Muslim woman for standing up for Muslims in Gaza. She'd already, before she crossed the floor, she'd already, she repeated outside of the parliamentary chamber from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free, as after Anthony Albanese said it was an inflammatory slogan. Then she resigned from all of her Senate committees. But the Labour factions, they were very angry that someone had ratted on the party, and so they wanted her punished, expelled. And so Anthony Albanese was basically rolled. So she's been, and also she did an interview on ABC Insiders where she vowed that she'd cross the floor again to recognise Palestine. So Fatima Payman, she was suspended by the Labour. She's suspended by the Labour caucus until she agrees to vote with the team. By her own actions and statements, Senator Payman has placed herself outside the privilege that comes with participating in the federal parliamentary Labour Party caucus. If Senator Payman decides she respects the caucus and her Labour colleagues, she can return. But until the Senator Payman is suspended from the right to participate in federal parliamentary Labour Party caucus meetings and processes. Now, Fatima Payman has responded that she will be taking the rest of the week off. She said, since the Prime Minister suspended me indefinitely, I've lost all contact with my caucus colleagues. I've been removed from caucus meetings, committees, internal group chats, and whip bulletins. I've been told to avoid chamber duties that require a vote, including divisions, motions, and matters of public interest. I've been exiled. These actions lead me to believe that some members are attempting to intimidate me into resigning from the Senate. As a result, I'll abstain from voting on Senate matters for the remainder of the week, unless a matter of conscience arises which will uphold the true values and principles of the Labour Party. I will use that time to reflect on my future and the best way to represent the people from Western Australia. Because she claims that she is upholding the Labour Party policy on recognising Palestine, though the caucus decided that they'll only recognise Palestine after a peace process with a two-state solution. And she claims that the grassroots of the Labour Party, Labour for Palestine, are on her side, and it's basically called for the Labour grassroots to feel the wrath of the Labour MPs and senators over the parliamentary winter break. But, you know, also has solidarity, not just the Labour Party, Muslims, and they are now going to have vowed, because they believe that Fatima Payman has been mistreated for standing up for the rights of Muslim Palestinians in Gaza, they are now vowing to vote as a bloc in the next federal election and threaten the seats where there is a substantial Muslim population held by Labour MPs in Western Sydney. This was on the news tonight.
A new Muslim political movement is confident that it can win seats from the Labour Party at the next federal election, challenging them in traditional heartland seats in both Sydney and Melbourne. They say the treatment of now outcast Labour Senator Fatima Payman has been the last straw. Here's our National Affairs editor, Hugh Rimmington, with this exclusive report.
If Gaza has brought despair, the treatment of Senator Fatima Payman has focused white-hot anger at the Albanese government.
I have never seen this level of unity and camaraderie and support within the Muslim community.
Senator Payman says she's faced intimidation from Labour since crossing the floor to vote for Palestinian statehood.
I know pretty closely how hard everyone has tried to support Senator Payman.
Labour now believes she could quit the party within days.
No individual is bigger than the team.
But a Muslim movement is now targeting at least a dozen Labour seats, saying their vote has been taken for granted.
Do you believe that you can win seats from the Labour Party?
I certainly think we will win seats.
In Sydney, on the new draft boundaries, Muslims make up 32%. In Jason Clare's electorate, his margin is 12. Fellow Minister Tony Burke has 25% Muslim constituents, margin 15%. Chris Bowen, 14% Muslims, 7% margin. In Parramatta, 11% Muslim voters, a margin of less than 1%. Werriwar, 16% Muslim voters, a margin of 5. In Victoria, the Labor seats of Bruce, Holt, Corwell and Wills all have a higher Muslim vote than a majority for the sitting MP.
If Muslim voters are so steamed up they act as a bloc, and if effective preference deals can be made at next year's election, the Muslim vote on its own could be enough to destroy a Labor majority government.
I'm confident that Labor candidates can stand on our strong record.
But Labor has a fight for survival in what has long been considered the safest of ground. Hugh Rimmington for 10 News First.
And the Muslim vote, it's already got a social media presence. This is its Instagram. They've already got a candidate call out there. They've got a website where they are ranking the voting records of almost all Labour MPs who hold Muslim seats where Muslims are a large amount of voters. So there's obviously ones that are not held by Labour, are Fowler, held by independent Dai Lee. And we're going to get to the UK general election final countdown later on. But I think the British Greens could surge significantly because they are cultivating the pro-Palestine vote. Remembering the local elections back in May, the candidate who shouted Allah Akbar after he won a seat on the council, he was a Greens candidate there, and the Greens, they're also going to be door knocking in these electorates as well. Now, it has been quite the bizarre week of what you call terrorist close calls with two lone wolf actors. Popping up and preparing to carry out terrorist acts. So the first was last Wednesday, 19-year-old Jordan Patton. He was charged with doing an act in preparation for a terrorist attack. So he dressed up in full army camouflage with a knife, went from the Newcastle Civic Centre to the office of State Labour MP Tim Crackenthorpe, but thankfully chickened out. And then he went to a local museum where obviously they were very alarmed and called the police, and then he was disarmed there. Then he published a 205-page manifesto where he said that if he was captured, try and attack and kill every inmate on prison staff I see. The magistrate who said that his alleged crime carried overtones of mental health. So his manifesto had mentioned intentions to kill Labour politicians, and Anthony Albanese cried when he talked about his family being threatened. He said politicians' families should be off limits. And I think Anthony Albanese was also leading to that Peter Dutton's son should be off limit. 18-year-old Tom Dutton, who was on the front page of the News Corp papers yesterday with white substance, which said it was happy birthday day. People are saying who says that, and also it was a Snapchat photo said hello, how are you going. So that was 19-year-old going back to this very close call attempted terrorist attack. So Jordan Patton, I noticed that the White Rose Society did some free labor for the Sydney Morning Herald. What suckers they are to like give the mainstream media their services for free. And so the White Rose Society, they through their scouring of social media, that has said that he harbored anti-LGBT and incel views and professed admiration for the Christchurch mass killer. So, like I said, thankfully nobody was harmed in this attempted terror attack. But unfortunately, today, a 22-year-old University of Sydney student was stabbed by a 14-year-old it's not been called by law enforcement a terrorist attack, but he had been previously charged with planning a church, Christchurch-style attack. This is from the Daily Telegraph. So he was charged with planning a terror attack at a Sydney school less than a year before he allegedly stabbed a man outside the University of Sydney, but the charges were dismissed on mental health grounds in February this year. It's understood the teen was put in a de-radicalized program under the Department of Community and Justice. One of the federal police officers who did the press conference this afternoon said that, oh, it's the internet that's radicalizing all these people. It'd be better if the internet didn't exist. Of course, there was no terrorism, extremism before the internet. We had a very peaceful, non-politically violent world before the internet. Now, this is quite alarming that there has been two lone wolves in the past week. Now, this 14-year-old, he's not going to be named because he's a minor. So according to police, they said it can't be defined his political ideology, but he wasn't pro-Palestinian. But they've popped up in the past week, and one of them was known to police. Now, we do know that there has been a review of the work of the Australian Federal Police in their monitoring of juveniles who are engaged in extremist ideologies. So Federal Police is currently conducting a review into an undercover counterterrorism operation which targeted a 13-year-old autistic boy with a fixation on Islamic State. And so one of the undercover fed him more extremist information. So they were actually radicalizing him more when it's supposed to be, they're all supposed to be about de-radicalization. Now, I'm not sure if this is all just a coincidence, but the Murdoch-owned Australian newspaper Rag did what they called an exclusive expose by Alexei Dimitriadi inside the rise of Australia's far right. And so it's basically just a review of Joel Davis's streams with Blair Cottrell and Thomas Sowell, and of course mentions how they celebrated Hitler's birthday at a German pub in Victoria on April 20. And because Joel, I should say, he hasn't got much mainstream media scrutiny, or so should I say, hit pieces until now, because his rise on, well, not just his streams, but on social media as well. And it's noted here. So it says, Davis, whose anti-Semitic vitriol is the most extreme, has seen his followers increase almost 1,000% since October 7. The Counter-Extremism Project warned figures needed to be monitored more closely. And it goes further, it quotes, obviously, this reporter watched hours and hours of Joel Davis. And the way that, because it mainly focuses on Joel's anti-Semitism. So Davis's podcast with Cottrell often includes Sewell as a guest across hours of footage. Hatred of Jews, Holocaust denial, admiration for Hitler are prominent. If Jews weren't behaving like they do, we probably wouldn't be making anti-Semitic comments. The way that this is all put together, the readers of The Australian would form the view the trio and their followers are wanting to finish Hitler's job with the Holocaust, wanting to finally exterminate the Jews. That's the impression that you get from reading this. So also quoted here is Josh Ruse from Deakin University, an extremism expert. And also Peter Khalil's wife, Lydia Khalil, who's also worked for the Lowy Institute as well. So Joel, Tom and Blair, they haven't been deterred by this. In fact, they provided a statement, Blair and Tom provided statements to Alexei Dimitriadi here. I'll just see if I can find it. So Cottrell told The Australian he was not a member of any group and stood by his comments, saying evidence just wasn't there and it was not illegal to have an opinion. That's about the Holocaust. Like any sensible Australian, the only thing that concerns me is my country and the direction it's currently going in. When approached by his comments, Sewell claimed that any possible new laws to censor free or hate speech proved our point that the government had no respect for the founding stock of this nation. So, yes, the AFP official today, when talking about, he didn't say that this 14-year-old committed it wasn't declared a terrorist incident, and that he didn't have a coherent ideology, but talked about the neo-Nazi extremist threat. But of course, we've seen from the media and from law enforcement authorities, over-focus on, they claim that National Socialist Network, if we're not careful, could take over. And last week, the Right Rose Society called them a violent street gang. But of course, if you watch the 6 p.m. news, evening news, although obviously a lot of it is fake, you will see that the real threat to Australians out in the suburbs is not a threatening street gang of neo-Nazis. They're still after Thomas Sewell for that walk through the main street of Ballarat at the end of last year during the Eureka Stockade anniversary. So there are Victorians, Australians every day who are victims of home invasions, carjackings, robberies. We have tobacco stores, firebombs. Australia is getting less safe. And of course, we're going to get into the absolutely depraved end of Pride Month, but we are seeing some really depraved and really deviant people around, including I took public transport into Tucker Carlson on Monday evening, but thankfully on the tram that I was on, there was not a naked African man.
It wouldn't matter if you were. There's kids. I mean, it's very wrong, bro. You got to go see a stop right for the time, bro. Get off, bro.
This stop is...
Don't you feel enriched with seeing a naked African on the tram? I remember in the Irish, part of their recent cultural enrichment was a naked African man in one of their supermarkets there. Dawn Browning says Elijah Schaefer's interview with Tom Saul is fascinating. He's also interviewed Joel Davis, including there was the big debate between Joel Davis and Drew Pavlou, is diversity a strength? As far as I know, it's very clear to see where Joel Davis stands on anything. But Drew Pavlou, I think he just believes in himself. Drew Pavlou believes in Drew Pavlou and his moral superiority. Now, in Victoria, where our state debt is about to blow out by 2027-28 to $188 billion, our hospitals are being told to make cuts. The Minister for Health, Marianne Thomas, has told hospitals to get rid of waste and duplication and said they won't get their budgets topped up if they fall into the red. And so hospitals are advising their staff to turn off the lights when they leave the room. But there's still money in the budget for our state politicians. You get a 3.5% pay rise, although that was done by an independent authority. The Metro Tunnel blowout, it's blown out from $11 billion to $14 billion and won't be ready until the middle of next year. The state government, they'll provide additional funds to get that finished as well. There's always money for the big build, which the CFMEU benefits for. And the Victorian government has also got funding for this new pro-transgender advertising campaign. The unsaid says a lot. Think about what you're really saying. Everyone deserves to be safe and supported and equal. Help make Victoria more inclusive by supporting our trans and gender diverse communities. This is the ad that is being paid for by our tax dollars going around. Okay, let's unpack everything that was wrong with that ad, apart from the fact that it's a whole waste of our money. So it is pro-trans women, biological men, in women's sports. So you saw that big-looking woman trans woman, biological male, being invited to play, probably because that the girls they wanted to win. They're, of course, you didn't see the footage there of the trans woman, biological male, flattening an opponent, an opponent on the team, a biological female, and injuring her. And notice when that old trans woman was helped by an old Chinese man. So clearly, even though the Chinese, well, aren't pro, most of them aren't pro trans. And you saw that freak who turned up at that barbecue, and they all give it a real hostile look, probably because they have made a scene before and demand to be called a Z-Z-Zem. And then there's the first one where that woman sees the trans woman, biological male, getting into the lift and leaves before the lift opens because, well, she doesn't feel safe. Or maybe she is put off because the trans woman smells because of bottom surgery going wrong. Because we spoke last week about how a trans woman, biological male, committed suicide after a botched backyard orchiectomy, which was just cutting off the testicles, not a full bottom surgery. And this is the thing, the having surgery down there can go absolutely horribly wrong and lead to chronic pain, and also bowel and urinary issues where you constantly smell. So, for example, this is from some transgender surgery forum. Do I have fistula? I had a colon vagoplasty last year, and although there have been spells where I had some discharge that's smelly brown, it's mostly not an issue. Over the last week, I've had a lot of discharge and it's literally brown and smells just like poop. People have actually noticed the smell and I've had to play along that it isn't me. I did have unprotected sex recently, although there was no ejaculation. So I'm looking into an STI test to rule this out. Can this be a thing with colon vaginoplasty? Any advice on how to get rid of this? Could this be fistula? I'm absolutely out of my mind with grief. I'm devastated. I wanted the surgery all my life, and I feel I could have went completely wrong. Please help me. So the meme comes true. I'm not sure if you've seen these memes where the transgender in the corner says they don't know I've had bottom surgery. What's that smell? Something smells like shit. Now, on trans issues, in the UK general election campaign, the Conservatives, that even though they've done nothing in their 14 years to protect biological women and single-sex spaces, they claim that they're the only party that knows what a woman is. Saying that women don't have penises. I mean, that's hardly groundbreaking. Do you want a fucking medal for it? I mean, really. And this is the whole thing about the fakeness of the UK conservative and the intellectual dark web. That they say things that cost them nothing. That, of course, you're stating something which has always been science. That's not going to cost. In most circumstances, it's not going to cost you your job. But of course, in the UK, there are all these trans allies. When Keir Starmer becomes prime minister at the end of the week, he is going to make it easier for trans people to change their sex and make a transgender a protected attribute under hate speech laws. one of the most, you would say, in-your-face pro-trans celebrities is Scottish actor David Tennant, who played the 10th and 14th Doctor on Doctor Who. And, of course, that has been destroyed by woke ideology. They have the new black and gay Doctor. And so he got some LGBT ally award and decided to attack the UK Minister for Women, Kemi Badenoch, who looks like she is going to be is the Conservative HQ. They are going to anoint her as the next leader, if there are any MPs left, as the chosen one. Yeah, she was born in London, but she is of she is of Nigerian ethnicity. So this was David Tennant's accepted speech, this is what he said about Kemi Badenoch.
With a slogan, I attract the ire of the occasional online idiot, but I don't have social media, so even I have to be told about that by my brilliant wife Georgia, who is the real engine behind anything we do. She educates me about empathy and understanding, and she has been a huge educator for me. But I suppose if I'm honest, I'm a little depressed by the fact that acknowledging that everyone has the right to be who they want to be and live their life how they want to live it, as long as they're not hurting anyone else, should merit any kind of special award or special mention, because it's common sense, isn't it? It is human decency. We shouldn't live in a world where that is worth remarking on. However, until we wake up and Kemi Badenoch doesn't exist anymore, I don't wish ill of her, I just wish her to shut up. Whilst we do live in this world, I am honoured to receive this. I'm thrilled to be here and to be a part of this night. Pride is very important in our house. It's a family affair. We have skin in the game. So this event tonight thrills me. It gives me hope. It gives me fire. It gives me energy and deep joy. And even if I feel I don't really deserve this, I'm very pleased and very proud to be receiving it. Thank you all so much.
Now, this is one of David he said he doesn't have social media, but he does have somebody runs, probably his agent or his publicist runs a social media account for him. And there he is with the Pride Progress flag, with wearing a shirt, "You will have to come through me." Maybe he thinks he's got the power of the Doctor. Who is, of course, if you're a Whovian, the Doctor is not human. He's a Time Lord from Gallifrey, who has two hearts. Now, Kemi Badenoch, in her reply, decided to play the race and gender card. So she posted in response, "A rich lefty white male celebrity so blinded by ideology, he can't see the optics of attacking the only black woman in the government by calling publicly for me to shut up. I will not shut up. I will not be silenced by men who prioritize applause from Stonewall over the safety of women and girls. Tennant is one of Labour's celebrity supporters. This is an early example of what life will be like if they win. Keir Starmer stood by while Rosie Duffield, his Labour MP, was hounded for believing in biological sex. He and his supporters will do the same thing with this country. Do not let the bigots and bullies win." And this has always pissed me off about the right, and also the TERFs, part of their argument seems to be that we're such weak and precious petals that you're attacking us vulnerable women. We can't handle it. So they respond to attacks on them based on because they oppose identity groups respond with identity groups. And so Kemi Badenoch, obviously David Tennant, it was pretty vulgar of him to say for her to shut up, and like said, oh, it'd be good if she didn't exist, but I don't wish her harm or anything. He sort of backtracked there, but her response was just awful, and I guess it's no wonder that the conservatives want her to be the chosen one. And Rishi Sunak, he hasn't got much left, said that freedom of speech is the most powerful feature of our democracy. If you're calling for women to shut up and wishing they didn't exist, you are the problem. And Count Dankula responded, you tried to put me in jail over a fucking meme. And then Rishi Sunak, in the final debate, he said, it's really simple. Sex means biological sex. Now, I think the reason why DEI has put the Conservative Party on the road to political extinction, I like many on the dissident right, are hoping they win zero seats. We're going to get more of it from the Conservatives if they manage to survive. Now, this was shared by Steve Laws of the English Democrats, which is a Indigenous English party. So this is a YouGov survey, breaks down the voting intentions of ethnic minority Brits. And so altogether, 53% Labour, 14% Conservative, 14% Green. So this is why I think the Greens, they could have a really good night in the UK. They've only ever had about one seat, and the Lib Dems on 6, Reform on 7. If you look to Pakistani Bangladesh, the Greens on 29%, the Conservatives just on 7%. But look here. So Labour, when it comes to Indians, 40% still ahead, but the Conservatives, 32%. And so the Conservative Party will be looking at that poll and they'll probably be thinking, well, we need more Suella Bravamans. We need more Priti Patels. And maybe they were privy to these polls in when they decided to believe that Rishi Sunak was the chosen one, and decided to support him backstabbing Boris Johnson to be a anointed prime minister, because they certainly won't want to cultivate the votes of the white working class. Because whites don't tend to vote as a bloc, as we were just talking about, the Muslims are vowing to vote as a bloc. It seems also over in the UK as well as Australia. Now, Reform, led by Nigel Farage, it was apparently all over for Reform and Farage after his Ukraine comments, where he said that NATO and EU expansion had provoked Russian aggression, though Putin still has sole responsibility for invading Ukraine. There was one town hall he was at where some theatre, some staff in there decided to unfurl a banner which behind Farage said, I love Putin. And he said, somebody here should be given the sack. And his staff couldn't pull it down because it was... But the big Reform rally that Farage had in Birmingham, which it was very US presidential Trump style, that went on without a hitch, and it had all of the fireworks there. Did anyone Did anyone catch any of it? I think I've got some footage of it. Now, Eminem hasn't put out a statement saying that that it's unauthorized Farage's use of his Without Me song, but that hasn't happened. It seems that probably Eminem is liking that the song Without Me is surging on Spotify and Apple Music. So, and it was the social media operation of Reform, how they're all live streamed direct to the people. Reform has the most social media engagement organically, not paid. Though, because calling Farage a Putin puppet, Kremlin talking points, Russia apologist, you name it, that didn't work. Channel 4 decided would hire a production company, Lee Sorrell Media, to film a number of Nigel Farage's Clacton volunteers who are going canvassing, door knocking. And one of them who said the most racist and abhorrent remarks was a volunteer by the name of Andrew Parker. And this is, I'll play the Channel 4 segment of him.
BMW, brilliant. Let's go. What's your name, fella?
Andy.
Mr. Parker tells our investigator he's known Farage for years.
Yeah, I met him in a restaurant in London.
Yeah.
And I said, well, because we're quite a laugh with him.
Yeah.
Do us a favour, get your arse out and put yourself up for candidate. He's rung me a couple of times, I've texted him, so he's getting on.
We're assigned to go out canvassing with Mr. Parker. In the car, there's a pep talk about what to say on the doorstep.
The immigration thing, use the word illegal, emphasise illegal, especially if you open the door, it's a bunch of...
The Reform canvasser then gives his view on Muslims and what the party would do with mosques.
Sick, mate, sick motherfuckers. It's a cult, Lord. I tell you what, if you don't know about Islam, it's the most disgusting cult out. With kicking all the Muslims out of the mosques and then serving them in the Witherspoons. Yeah, yeah.
As well as his opinion on the Prime Minister, Rishi Sunak.
Yeah. I've always been a Tory voter. What annoys me is, the f*** we got here, what's good is he? You tell me, you know, he's just wet.
What, Sunak?
The Reform Party.
Yes.
Would you be interested?
Quite a bit, Jane.
That's like complete shit. If you go back something like 10,000 years, and the Scotland was hotter than Spain. DL11, yeah, not a place near Dover, army recruitment. Get the young recruits there, yeah, with guns on the beach, target practice. To shoot them. That's what the Greeks done. They know about that. The Greeks shot a lot.
Look at the Australians.
I've just seen ring fence Bradford-Stan round and just do that. You've got these bastards running our country. You must be f***ing joking, mate. Keep flying that flag. So the reason I'm going to Reform is because the situation is that Rishi Sunak ain't worth pissing on, to be honest. And do us a favour. You're a paramedic and not getting your ambulance, just don't put oxygen on the bar, so you say it else. You know where I'm coming from. That's a yes.
Yeah.
No, we're all okay, all mate. All right?
Yeah, okay, no worries. Thank you.
What's the trouble with the brain dead people?
Now, what's Channel 4? Well, say that they didn't know was that Andrew Parker is a part-time actor, and on his acting bio. He is real. He does an impersonation of what he calls rough talk, which is what he was speaking in that Channel 4 clip, which is not his real voice. And he also said that he specialized in hidden filming. Now, Channel 4 have said, oh, we stand by journalism. There's no evidence that Channel 4 has paid him or anyone else, but it certainly does look suspicious, and that's what Nigel Farage said, that this looks like a stitch-up. And Farage was on Question Time the next day, where there are also several left-wing activist plants in the audience, and he got hostile questions machine-gunned at him. Like, why does Reform attract so many racists? And it was bleeped out what Andrew Parker described the Prime Minister, which was a fucking Paki, which Paki is short for Pakistani, and Paki is considered like a really bad slur in the UK, on par with the N-word, and so that's why they bleeped it out. I don't think it's ever been like a big deal in Australia. It's just short for Pakistani, although here you can't say Abbo as short for Aboriginal. That's considered a racial slur. But like his colleague, Kemi Badenoch, Rishi Sunak decided to play the race card in responding to this part-time actor, describing him as a fucking Paki.
Yeah, well, my two daughters have to see and hear Reform people who campaign for Nigel Farage calling me an effing Paki. It hurts and it makes me angry. And I think he has some questions to answer. And I don't repeat those words lightly. You know, I do so deliberately because this is too important not to call out clearly for what it is.
Dawn Browning says he should be jailed, as should Channel 4. They knew. Well, Nigel Farage and Reform have put a complaint into the Electoral Commission for alleged election interference. Now, there were genuine volunteers who Nigel Farage has also sacked for what they said in the undercover. Camera, even though those who were covertly filmed said that the undercover reporter was trying to encourage them to say extreme statements. It's sort of what that Dave Ryan encouraged NSN, National Socialist Network members, to do when he was working for Nick McKenzie of 60 Minutes undercover. And also, how come the undercover person gets away with saying racist and bigoted things in the process of trying to get others? I mean, isn't it always wrong? But George Jones, who was a longtime UKIP and then Reform campaigner, this was his sackable offence as a volunteer.
And homophobia from Farage's inner circle.
You see that degenerate flag on the front bonnet? What the old Bill doing promoting that crap?
He's talking about the pride flag. It is a fucking degenerate flag. We're going to get to fucking degenerate end of Pride Month very shortly. Now, it does seem that Farage is spooked by these accusations of racism, and he's talked up his Muslim millionaire donor, whose name is Saya Yusuf, who has given Reform hundreds of thousands of pounds. Used to be a Tory donor, and as he spoke at Birmingham, which of course is a Muslim one of the biggest Muslim cities in the UK. It's more like Birmingham. So Zia Yusuf addressed them, and Farage said, no racists are welcome in my party. I've sacked three candidates for racist remarks. So he is spooked and talking about how they've got non-white candidates, non-Indigenous BRIC candidates, and a lot of their volunteers are non-white as well. So it has worked. I cuck Farage to a degree. Margot, that is absolutely abhorrent comment. They should start Paki bashing here. Disgusting racism, Margot. And then she says, cry me a river, Paki. Of course, Rishi Sunak is not Pakistani. He is Indian. Well, that's his ethnicity, married to an Indian heiress. I will probably apply after he loses the election and most likely loses his seat. We'll pack up with his wife, reapply for a US green card to go over into the California sunset. California Dreaming, I think, would be the most appropriate song for Rishi Sunak to sum up his campaign. Now, over in California, that is where probably the most disgusting and depraved and sickening LGBT pride event ever occurred. So apparently San Francisco has no city laws against nudity, though you cannot engage in sex in public. Yet, two of Tenet Media's reporters, Savannah Hernandez and Taylor Hansen, they went to San Francisco's Pride Parade and found it was supposedly an over 18 fetish zone. For over 18s, but no ID was checked, and they encountered there was a man receiving a blowjob, and also there were men peeing on each other. It was a kiddie pool full of pee. Absolutely disgusting, abhorrent. They went to the San Francisco Police Department and said, why don't you arrest them? And they said, no, we're not going to. I'm not going to play it here because, thankfully, YouTube doesn't allow pornography, though Twitter X does allow pornographic content to be posted, which is why and there's a lot of debate about whether reposting disgusting degenerate content to show what's going on is necessary. It's sort of like how Alex Rosen of I Fight Kids, who was temporarily suspended from Twitter X, a lot of people question whether it's necessary for him to put out there these pedophiles describing their sexual abuse of children and minors. I know that us pretending it doesn't exist doesn't save the children. Now, also at San Francisco Pride, Taylor Hansen interviewed the naked men and said, you're waving to kids while you're naked. And I said, oh, it's because they're just there. But also these parents, they should also they should lose their children for bringing their children to an event where they know there's going to be naked men who are there naked because they are sexually excited. I mean, LGBT pride, it's an identity based on sexual gratification. And now, if you thought that Pride Month couldn't have a more decadent ending, so a gay pornographic actor who goes by the name of Austin Wolf. His real name is Justin Heath Smith. He was charged with receiving hundreds of horrific child abuse material. One video was of a 10-year-old who was bound and raped. Other videos included children as young as infants. One of Wolf's most recent social media posts to his hundreds of followers read, "Have you seen what happens to little boys that follow me into the locker room?" And now, here's a Twitter X profile where he posts his explicit videos. Now, obviously, they all feature boys who are over 18, but wouldn't there be a sign there if he's choosing these boys who have just turned 18 and role-playing that they are little boys? I mean, shouldn't that have raised a red flag? And a lot of people are asking Elon Musk to reconsider his change in policy to allow, to formally allow sexually explicit material and allow it to be monetized on X because for money, because it seems he wants to compete with OnlyFans. So what is it going to be called? Triple X? So, yeah, it's absolutely... This was what we saw at San Francisco Pride. There's also Naked Men at Toronto Pride as well. It's been my long established position that Pride parades, they should be restricted to stadiums and be restricted to over 18. I mean, if you want to piss on other men, I'm a libertarian, whatever floats your boat or floats your pool, but do it in the privacy of your own home or a private club. I mean, I'll channel Tucker Carlson from last night, who said, you know, I don't care if like my neighbor is doing lots of degenerate stuff, or he said if they're transgender, I don't want to see it and hear about it, but I don't think you should be arrested for it. Obviously, if you're performing sex in public where children are present, you should be arrested, charged with lewd and lascivious conduct, and be a registered sex offender. Though none of this has deterred the Biden administration from celebrating Pride Month at the White House, even though last year there was that trans woman who got her fake boobs out and was banned from the White House, thankfully, forever. Now, Joe wasn't there because he was taking lots of naps for his debate prep, though his daughter Ashley Biden was there along with her mother Jill Biden. Remember Ashley Biden's the one who in her diary she said she had she had her showers late at night because she was scared that her father would come in and join her in the shower. So this was her attempting to recite the alphabet.
LGBTQ students deserve to be safe.
I mean, you just see her there. That's only like 6 seconds. You can tell that she's got trauma, and I don't know why she's there. And now, after Joe Biden's debate performance against Donald Trump on CNN, Trump, he was very restrained, decided to see presidential and just let Joe Biden's dementia, Alzheimer's, whatever he's got, do the talking or the gibberish. I mean, let's relive some of the lowlights.
Solitary person eligible for what I've been able to do with the with the COVID, dealing with everything we have to do with, look, if we finally beat Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden. President Trump?
Well, he's right. He did beat Medicare. He beat it to death, and he's destroying Medicare.
Thank you, President Biden.
It's been a terrible thing, what you've done. The fact is that the vast majority of constitutional scholars supported Roe when it was decided. Supported Roe. And that's this idea that they were all against it is just ridiculous. And this is the guy who says the state should be able to have it. We're in a state where in 6 weeks, you don't even know whether you're pregnant or not, but you cannot see a doctor and have him decide on what your circumstances are, whether you need help. The idea that states are able to do this is a little like saying we're going to turn civil rights back to the states, let each state have a different rule. Look, there's so many young women who have been, including a young woman who just was murdered, and he went to the funeral. The idea that she was murdered by an immigrant coming in, they talk about that. But here's the deal. There's a lot of young women who are being raped by their in-laws, by their spouses, brothers and sisters, it's just ridiculous. And they can do nothing about it. And they try to arrest them when they cross state lines.
Thank you.
So he was talking about Roe versus Wade. There needs to be abortion because not only are women are raped by illegal immigrants, but raped by family members. Well, some in the case of Joe Biden himself, there's no evidence that he sexually assaulted his daughter, but it is extremely inappropriate, particularly if your daughter fears it, to have a naked shower with your daughter. So it was absolutely like Joe Biden got a bit better toward like in the middle of the day, but then he fluffed his closing remarks, and afterwards the CNN pundits, they couldn't sugarcoat it. I mean, sure, the Paige Shields, like Harry Sisson said, but Biden did great, but there was serious panic about should he be replaced. Though after Joe Biden, after talking with his wife Jill and son Hunter, they want him to keep going. So basically, the Democrats, if they want to replace Joe as the nominee, they're going to have to kill him or give him the wrong drugs. Clearly, they either didn't drug him or the drugs didn't work because he's developed a tolerance for it. I saw that Roger Stone put this meme of Hillary Clinton injecting the morphine into Joe Biden in hospital. Though, like I said, his wife Jill, she is encouraging him. Sorry, Dr. Jill Biden. She's a doctor of education. And after the debate, she, in her best teacher voice, told Joe what a good job he did during the debate.
Joe, you did such a great job. You answered every question. You knew all the facts. And let me ask the crowd, what did Trump do? Lie! Yes.
She's speaking to the audience like their children as well. And what did Trump do? Lie. And that's what also the CNN anchors panelists were going on. Oh, Trump told lie after lie about January 6th and all these other things. And now they are really, well, not only are they really upset that now Trump is the firm front runner, but the U.S. Supreme Court, it had a flood of decisions before its summer recess, has ruled that Donald Trump, he cannot be prosecuted for acts as part of his presidential duty. Now, this is being sold as that the U.S. president can do anything, order the assassination of his political opponents. And that's what, because it was 6-3 along party lines. Sonia Sotomayor said there's nothing that prevents the president from using Navy SEALs to kill his political opponent. Well, we have seen maybe it wasn't a good idea to grant in the past U.S. presidents the power to kill American citizens with drones on foreign soil. I mean, there is a lot of a summary execution powers that the president has accumulated over the years. Only now it's a problem. They're saying that Trump can act like a king if he becomes president again. And there's some Biden supporters are saying, oh, he should try and kill Trump now because this is what this ruling means. If Donald Trump, say, like he said, shot people in the middle of Fifth Avenue, like he talked about, and he wouldn't lose any votes, he would be prosecuted for that because that's not part of his job as president. This was this graphic was put together. Where are we here? I've got too many graphics here. So the test is that if it's official conduct, conclusive, preclusive core constitutional duty, he has absolute immunity. If it's not conclusive, preclusive core, then presumed immunity. Then the test is pose any danger to the intrusion on the authority of the functions of executive branch. Yes, are there no prosecution? If no, yes, prosecution uses evidence. Unofficial conduct such as possibility of false electors, possibility eclipse speech. So it only really destroys the Jack Smith special prosecutor case against the January 6th charges. So he can still be prosecuted for the classified documents because that was after he was president, and the hush money conviction, which he'll be sentenced to on October 11. Tucker Carlson believes he will be sentenced to jail. That's a real possibility because the hush money was paid before he was elected president. All right. The final bit of news is also, the French had the first round of their parliamentary elections where Marine Le Pen's National Rally Party became in the first round of voting the top party. There is a second round of voting on July the 7th. So the party president, Jordan Bardella, he could very much become the new prime minister of France. And I don't know why Emmanuel Macron decided to call this election. So the results of the first round, I'll just give you the official breakdown. National Rally got 33%. The left-wing Popular Front got 28%. Macron's Centre Alliance got 22%. And the centre-right Republicans, Nicolas Sarkozy's party, the president from long ago, 6%, and others 10%. So now is now Kylian Mbappe and the other French African football players, and now they're going to throw the game at the Euros. We shall see. All right, everyone, that brings us to end of this special Tim's News Explosion for another week. Thank you for joining me once again. Now make sure that you tune in on Friday morning, 8:30 a.m. Australian time, because that is when we will start to get results from the United Kingdom general election. It'll be an hour and a half after the polls close in the UK. We'll be going for most of the day, so it'll be co-hosted by myself, 99 Iron Duke, and Harry Richardson, president of the British Australian community. We're providing an Anglosphere perspective on the results. Obviously, we know who's coming first. That is Sir Keir Starmer and his Labour Party. But it's who comes second, third, fourth, and fifth, which is what will be the most consequential result in the new, because they have 5-year terms there. So Labour will get a massive majority, but it's who will be the opposition. And also, because we so Keir Starmer is not popular. He's no Tony Blair. He's going to be the most hated prime minister probably by Christmas because he's got no magic wand, because socialism doesn't create prosperity. So thank you so much for joining me on this special Tuesday night edition of Tim's News Explosion. I will see you all then. Now that stream will be, I should say, on the Unshackled YouTube channel. Obviously, I'll send it out on the Unshackled's Substack and post it to all of the Unshackled socials on Telegram, Twitter X, Facebook, Gab. Remember, I cannot do all of this, bring you reports from Tucker Carlson's show, bring you Tim's News Explosion interviews like I just did with Lachlan Lay, Dunder Viking. You can take out an Unshackled membership, $5 per month, $50 per year, $10 per month, silver, $100 per year, gold, $25 per month, $250 per year, platinum, $50 per month, platinum, $500 per year. And over on Substack, you can also take out a membership. And as I said, that's where we also send out all of the email alerts as well. So please consider supporting the work of the Unshackled, because it certainly takes a lot of time and investment to bring you all of this news. So the unshackled.substack.com/subscribe. And also make sure wherever you're watching, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on Rumble, whether it's on Odyssey, give a thumbs up, like, comment below, because it all helps with the algorithm. So until I see you next on Friday morning for it's the final countdown now. We will know. we know who'll win, but what the exact results will be. I wonder if there's any last-minute bets from Conservative Party candidates, staffers, on how they'll lose. This is the last bit of scandal as the Conservatives get obliterated, that Conservative candidates, staffers, and including one of Rishi Sunak's personal protective police betted on the date of the election day. So, although, of course, it would probably be the official odds. What is it? Labour, probably $1.01 there. But all will be concluded there on Friday. In the meantime, stay safe, stay sane, stay free, stay warm here, and also stay happy. Don't let what we are seeing around us bring us down, because it was so, last night, it was so inspiring to be with like-minded people, be reminded how great Australians can be. You could strike up a conversation with the person next to you in the theatre and out in the foyer. It was just good to be around great people. And I would also say thank you, all of you in the chat as well. You are great people as well. It's great to have so many excellent Australians and also members of the wider Anglosphere following the Unshackled as well. So until next time, good night.
Tim's News Explosion. 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 Tim's News Explosion.